Book 18, Chapter 6, Part 1. Of the navigation of King Agrippa to Rome, to Tiberius Caesar, and how upon his being accused by his own freedman he was bound. Also how he was set at liberty by Caius, after Tiberius's death, and was made king of the Tetrarchy of Philip. Little before the death of Herod the king, Agrippa lived at Rome, and was generally brought up and conversed with Drusus, the emperor Tiberius's son, and contracted a friendship with Antonia, the wife of Drusus the Great, who had his mother Bernice in great esteem, and was very desirous of advancing her son. Now as Agrippa was by nature magnanimous and generous in the presents he made, while his mother was alive, this inclination of his mind did not appear that he might be able to avoid her anger for such his extravagance. But when Bernice was dead, and he was left to his own conduct, he spent a great deal extravagantly in his daily way of living, and a great deal in the immoderate presents he made, and those chiefly among Caesar's freedmen, in order to gain their assistance, insomuch that he was, in a little time, reduced to poverty, and could not live at Rome any longer. Tiberius also forbade the friends of his deceased son to come into his sight, because on seeing them he should be put in mind of his son, and his grief would thereby be revived. For these reasons he went away from Rome and sailed to Judea, but in evil circumstances, being dejected with the loss of that money which he once had, and because he had not wherewithal to pay his creditors, who were many in number, and such as gave no room for escaping them. Whereupon he knew not what to do. So, for shame of his present condition, he retired to a certain tower at Malitha in Idumea, and had thoughts of killing himself. But his wife Cypros perceived his intentions, and tried all sorts of methods to divert him from his taking such a course. So she sent a letter to his sister Herodias, who was now the wife of Herod the Tetrarch, and let her know Agrippa's present design, and what necessity it was which drove him thereto, and desired her, as a kinswoman of his, to give him her help, and to engage her husband to do the same, since she saw how she alleviated these her husband's troubles all she could, although she had not the like wealth to do it withal. So they sent for him, and allotted him Tiberius for his habitation, and appointed him some income of money for his maintenance, and made him a magistrate of that city, by way of honor to him. Yet did not Herod long continue in that resolution of supporting him, though even that support was not sufficient for him. For as once they were at a feast at Tyre, and in their cups, and reproaches were cast upon one another, Agrippa thought that was not to be borne, while Herod hit him in the teeth with his poverty, and with his owing his necessary food to him. So he went to Flaccus, one that had been consul, and had been a very great friend to him at Rome formerly, and was now president of Syria. Hereupon Flaccus received him kindly, and he lived with him. Flaccus had also with him there Aristobulus, who was indeed Agrippa's brother, but was at variance with him. Yet did not their enmity to one another hinder the friendship of Flaccus to them both, but still they were honorably treated by him. However, Aristobulus did not abate of his ill will to Agrippa, till at length he brought him to ill terms with Flaccus. The occasion of bringing him on which estrangement was this. The Damascens were at difference with the Sidonians about their limits, and when Flaccus was sent to hear the cause between them, they understood that Agrippa had a mighty influence upon him, so they desired that he would be of their side, and for that favor promised him a great deal of money. So he was zealous in assisting the Damascens as far as he was able. Now Aristobulus had gotten intelligence of this promise of money to him, and accused him to Flaccus of the same. And when, upon a thorough examination of the matter, it appeared plainly so to be, he rejected Agrippa out of the number of his friends. So he was reduced to the utmost necessity, and came to Ptolemais, and because he knew not where else to get a livelihood, he thought to sail to Italy. But as he was restrained from so doing by want of money, he desired Marcius, who was his freedman, to find some method for procuring him so much as he wanted for that purpose, by borrowing such a sum from some person or other. So Marcius desired of Peter, who was the freedman of Bernice, Agrippa's mother, and by the right of her testament was bequeathed to Antonia, to lend so much upon Agrippa's own bond and security. But he accused Agrippa of having defrauded him of certain sums of money, and so obliged Marcius, when he made the bond of 20,000 Attic drachmae, to accept of 2,500 drachma as less than what he desired, which the other allowed of, because he could not help it. Upon the receipt of this money, Agrippa came to Anthedon, and took shipping, and was going to set sail. But Herennius Capito, who was the procurator of Jamis, sent a band of soldiers to demand of him 300,000 drachmae of silver, which were by him owing to Caesar's treasury while he was at Rome, and so forced him to stay. He then pretended that he would do as he bid him, but when night came on, he cut his cables and went off, and sailed to Alexandria, where he desired Alexander the Alabarch to lend him 200,000 drachmae, but he said he would not lend it to him, but would not refuse it to Cypros, as greatly astonished at her affection to her husband, and at the other instances of her virtue. So she undertook to repay it. Accordingly, Alexander paid them 5 talents at Alexandria, and promised to pay them the rest of that sum at Dicearchia, Puteoli. And this he did out of the fear he was in that Agrippa would soon spend it. So this Cypros set her husband free, and dismissed him to go on with his navigation to Italy, while she and her children departed for Judea. And now Agrippa was come to Puteoli, whence he wrote a letter to Tiberius Caesar, who then lived at Capreae, and told him that he was come so far in order to wait on him, and to pay him a visit, and desired that he would give him leave to come over to Caprian. So Tiberius made no difficulty, but wrote to him in an obliging way in other respects, and withal told him he was glad of his safe return, and desired him to come to Capreae. And when he was come, he did not fail to treat him as kindly as he had promised him in his letter to do. But the next day came a letter to Caesar from Herennius Capito, to inform him that Agrippa had borrowed 300,000 drachmae, and had not paid it at the time appointed. But when it was demanded of him, he ran away like a fugitive, out of the places under his government, and put it out of his power to get the money of him. When Caesar had read this letter, he was much troubled at it, and gave order that Agrippa should be excluded from his presence until he had paid that debt, upon which he was no way daunted at Caesar's anger, but entreated Antonia, the mother of Germanicus and of Claudius, who was afterward Caesar himself, to lend him those 300,000 drachmae, that he might not be deprived of Tiberius's friendship. So, out of regard to the memory of Bernice his mother, for those two women were very familiar with one another, and out of regard to his and Claudius's education together, she lent him the money, and upon the payment of this debt there was nothing to hinder Tiberius's friendship to him. After this, Tiberius Caesar recommended to him his grandson, and ordered that he should always accompany him when he went abroad. But upon Agrippa's kind reception by Antonia, he betook him to pay his respects to Caius, who was her grandson, and in very high reputation by reason of the good will they bare his father. Now there was one Thallus, a freedman of Caesar, of whom he borrowed 1,000,000 of drachmae, and thence repaid Antonia the debt he owed her, and by sending the overplus in paying his court to Caius, became a person of great authority with him. Now as the friendship which Agrippa had for Caius was come to a great height, there happened some words to pass between them, as they once were in a chariot together, concerning Tiberius, Agrippa praying to God, for they two sat by themselves, that Tiberius might soon go off the stage, and leave the government to Caius, who was in every respect more worthy of it. Now Eutychus, who was Agrippa's freedman, and drove his chariot, heard these words, and at that time said nothing of them. But when Agrippa accused him of stealing some garments of his, which was certainly true, he ran away from him. But when he was caught, and brought before Piso, who was governor of the city, and the man was asked why he ran away, He replied that he had somewhat to say to Caesar that tended to his security and preservation. So Piso bound him and sent him to Capreae. But Tiberius, according to his usual custom, kept him still in bonds, being a delayer of affairs, if ever there was any other king or tyrant that was so, for he did not admit ambassadors quickly, and no successors were dispatched away to governors or procurators of the provinces that had been formerly sent, unless they were dead. Whence it was that he was so negligent in hearing the causes of prisoners, insomuch that when he was asked by his friends what was the reason of his delay in such cases, he said that he delayed to hear ambassadors, lest, upon their quick dismission, other ambassadors should be appointed and return upon him, and so he should bring trouble upon himself in their public reception and dismission, that he permitted those governors, who had been sent once to their government, to stay there a long while, out of regard to the subjects that were under them, for that all governors were naturally disposed to get as much as they can, and that those who are not to fix there, but to stay a short time, and that at an uncertainty, when they shall be turned out, do the more severely hurry themselves on to fleece the people. But if their government be long continued to them, they are at last satiated with the spoils, as having gotten a vast deal, and so become at length less sharp in their pillaging. But that if successors were sent quickly, the poor subjects, who were exposed to them as a prey, would not be able to bear the new ones, while they shall not have the same time allowed them wherein their predecessors had filled themselves, and so grew more unconcerned about getting more. And this because they were removed before they have had time for their oppressions. He gave them an example to show his meaning. A great number of flies came about the sore places of a man that had been wounded, upon which one of the standers-by pitied the man's misfortune, and thinking he was not able to drive those flies away himself, was going to drive them away for him. But he prayed him to let them alone. The other, by way of reply, asked him the reason of such a preposterous proceeding in preventing relief from his present misery. To which he answered, "If thou drivest these flies away, thou wilt hurt me worse, for as these are already full of my blood, they do not crowd about me, nor pain me so much as before, but are somewhat more remiss, while the fresh ones that come almost famished, and find me quite tired down already, will be my destruction. For this cause, therefore, it is that I am myself careful not to send such new governors perpetually to those my subjects, who are already sufficiently harassed by many oppressions, as may, like these flies, further distress them, and so, besides their natural desire of gain, may have this additional enticement to it, that they expect to be suddenly deprived of that pleasure which they take in it. And, as a further attestation to what I say of the dilatory nature of Tiberius, I appeal to this his practice itself. For although he was emperor 22 years, he sent in all but 2 procurators to govern the nation of the Jews, Gratus and his successor in the government, Pilate. Nor was he in one way of acting with respect to the Jews, and in another with respect to the rest of his subjects. He further informed them that even in the hearing of the causes of prisoners he made such delays, because immediate death to those that must be condemned to die would be an alleviation of their present miseries, while those wicked wretches have not deserved any such favor. Quote, "But I do it that, by being harassed with the present calamity, they may undergo greater misery." End quote.